Okay, we're testing. I put it a bit further like this, and then I didn't write down the questions, but we do remember it. Let's start, Lubaina Himet, let's start with the question about your work. You were born in Zanzibar and moved to the UK. So my first question would be, how much is your work influenced by your heritage, your background, your biographical background, the different cultures?
Well, I moved to England when I was 4 months old. So you would think that the influence would be hardly anything. But somehow I spent certainly the first 30 years of my life, in a sense, trying to find my way home. So I realized as the years went by that I was making work that, in a sense, was trying to recreate that place, recreate that sense of belonging, recreate a place that I didn't know. Well, I could find out a lot of things about it by looking at books, by asking people, but I'd never been. And I didn't go until I was in my 40s. But I realized when I got off the plane, when I went back to Zanzibar, that I had been looking for it in Venice, in Matanzas, in all sorts of strange and complicated cities. I'd sort of been looking for Zanzibar. And I think one of the biggest influences was always the fact that my mother, who was English, tried to talk to me about my father and his family, and really helped me understand how African I was, even though in England at the time, in the 1950s, I was a kind of unusual creature because there were not very many children, black children in the country at the time. But that sense of being from Zanzibar, of being proud of that, she always tried to, she tried very hard to help me with that. And I think the influence on my work is enormous, actually, because I somehow, even though I went to art school, the Wimbledon Art School and the Royal College of Art in London, I was always in my head painting places and people that gave me a sense of myself. And gave me a sense of belonging. And I was very, I don't know, passionate, I suppose, about going to art galleries in London and in other parts of Europe, all my teenage and 20s, 30s. And I was always looking for the black body in other people's paintings. And I could find, especially in British paintings, many slave servants. The paintings would be of the British aristocracy or royalty, and in the background or to the side would be these figures who are either holding a horse or holding a piece of fabric or helping the aristocrats. So all the time I was searching for myself and building worlds, I suppose, that I hadn't experienced as an adult, but I somehow felt very close to.
That's a good connection to, because we were talking today, because you received the Maria Lesnik Award tomorrow. And Maria Lesnik is very known for her portraits, obviously, and painting herself and the self-reflection of herself in her work. You, on the other hand, are using or portraying other people, other representative minorities, black women, females, not only in your installations and in your paintings. Do you have the reference to the different, you said you're looking for yourself in the others, but you didn't use yourself as a figure, but always the others versus Maria Lesnik, who was so much putting herself in the center?
I suppose, though, in my paintings, I'm quite often putting myself in the circumstance of others to see what that might feel like. So there are paintings that I have made that are looking, are trying to imagine what it must have been like to be a captured African on a ship across the Atlantic, where you had never seen the sea before, you had no idea what the sea was, you had no idea what a boat was, and you had no idea where you were going. But you were confined in a small space with maybe 300 other people, and you had been just taken from your family, from any, you know, the work that you did, the making of pots or the growing of plants, just taken from your place of living, taken from your family, put in this space you didn't know, and you have no idea what's going to happen to you. So I often try to imagine what that must be like. I don't want to depict that scene, because then how can we look at the painting? It's impossible. But if I can depict a scene that maybe gives you some idea of what it must be like to not know where you are or where you're going or why you are suddenly in this state, then I feel I've achieved something. So in a sense, I am in all the paintings, but I put myself inside the situation of either a historical situation, or in more recent paintings, you might see a painting of two men leaning against the wall, very beautifully dressed. And what I'm trying to undo, uncover, reveal there is what happens between, in the moment, between the question and the answer. And of course, what happens between a question and an answer is that a lifetime often happens. The question is asked, would you like to go for a drink? And in the asking of the question, you are wondering what might happen if you go for a drink. You're remembering what happened if you, when you went for a drink with somebody else. You're thinking about the place that you're going to. All sorts of very simple things, maybe, but quite complicated things about your life. And if you're asked a question, such a simple question as that, you also are projecting into the future, projecting into the past, imagining situations. But the moment between the question and the answer is often very short. But I'm trying to prolong that moment by painting it. But in order to do that, I have to put myself, if you like, into the painting. So I'm not painting portraits of myself, that's absolutely right. But I am painting situations that I either have experienced or want to experience to understand something better.
Thank you. Beautiful answers. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, that's a beautiful way of like looking at it. You're working in very different media. You're especially also using surfaces very differently. So you're not only working on canvas, you're working installational wise, but you're also working on wood, you're also on ceramics. Is the material and the tools and the textures you use implying something in your work? Has it always been like this?
It's been like this for quite a long time because, I mean, I think it's two things. First of all, I trained as a theatre designer. So I have a different canon, if you like, that I am part of. And I had different, reasons for different ways of having a relationship with an audience. So because I was trained as a theatre designer, audience was always very, very important to the work. Of course, you're designing sets and costumes for actors and plays and operas and ballets. But none of these things work if an audience isn't breathing in the same space as the performers. The performance goes flat, dies, if an audience isn't there. It can't function on its own. And so I always understood, before I became, if you like, a painter, the importance of that relationship between audience and performance. So that's sort of one thing. And the other thing is that when I paint on plates or in drawers or on doors, I know that audiences in showing spaces, art galleries, they know absolutely what a door is, what a plate is, what a drawer is. They've all used those things in the previous 24 hours. So I feel I can get a much closer relationship. Even if the audience member can't come close to the object because the museum will, you know, set off an alarm or something, they can come emotionally closer to the object because they know what the object is. So it's familiar. And then there's a moment at which, when they've engaged with this object, they then, more things that I want to say, situations, people, colours, clothes, political histories, then emerge, but emerge in a much closer relationship to that audience member than if I painted it on a canvas. There's a sort of, there's a thing that happens in museums where the curatorial voice, the museum voice, has authority, and the audience member sometimes is a little in awe of this. Surely the museum must know what the right answer is. The artist must know what the correct narrative is. The curator is interpreting. But my point isn't that the audience knows what the audience knows. The audience have been in love. They've lost people. They've felt in danger. They've laughed. So they also understand the work on a very human level. And so I sometimes want to present my work at that very human, domestic level, so that there's already a conversation going on between us, and then a new conversation happens because of what I've painted on that object.
Thank you. Now we are heading a bit more into the award and into Maria Lasnik. Have you been familiar with Maria Lasnik's work? Was Maria Lasnik somebody, as an artist, that you came across in your career?
Well, I came across Maria Lasnik's work late in my career, but I was, by chance, in a fantastic exhibition, the first time, a fantastic exhibition in Basel of watercolours by Maria Lasnik. And I didn't know who she was. And I looked at these watercolours for hours and hours and hours. I thought they were the most extraordinary pieces of art because they were incredibly dynamic and yet incredibly sort of delicate and, I don't know, it's very difficult. I mean, painting watercolour is very, very difficult for a start. But to have a kind of strength and a dynamism at the same time as a sort of delicacy is very, very challenging. And so I was just mesmerised by this huge, huge exhibition. And the works stayed with me. I found out a little bit more about her, but not a great deal. And then I was in Vienna. I was in Vienna with Magda Stavaska, and she has two friends, Georg and Sabina. And they said, come to this Maria Lasnik exhibition with us at the Albertina. And I said, oh, yes, I know this work. And I expected one thing, and then there was this fantastic show. I think the colours, Maria Lasnik's colours are not the colours I use, but they are, they're almost invented. Of course, you could say there are these lime greens, there are these pinks, these extraordinary combinations of colours. But again, there's this sort of elasticity, this kind of movement and dynamism in the work that I'm totally in awe of. I think I'm not so bad at painting stillness, but I don't really paint movement at all in the same way that she does. But I'm a fantastic admirer of the way that the paintings, in a sense, come out of the canvas, off the canvas and into the room. And when they don't do that, they lure you into the space in which the painting is taking place. So for me, they're all about a kind of materiality. You know, they're not illusion, they're real. And I find that's quite rare in, it's extraordinarily rare in a painting, because to some degree, painting is about illusion, and you might say, in a simplistic way, the sculpture is about reality. But these paintings draw you in, and if they don't draw you in, they come out and try and cover you in the showing space. It's quite bizarre and quite extraordinary. So I kind of was completely in love. And so to be awarded a prize in her name was quite overwhelming, really.
Wow, that's nice. I mean, you have been awarded with so many other awards, so this is like maybe the last question of, like, you know, then that's like filling the circle as you're, you know, walking us through your experience of experience in Maria Lasnik. So this award of the Maria Lasnik Award, which is a mid-career award, has it significance? Is it important to also you as an artist? I mean, you said it is not only like an award in the sense of a career step, but it's like very emotionally attached because you see yourself in reflection to this artist to a certain extent.
Yes, I think that's the importance of this award for me. I've been making work, you know, for many, many decades. But I never really saw myself in amongst other painters. And it sounds odd, but because I didn't go to art school with painters, I didn't know painters that well as I was moving through my career. Although I curated shows, exhibitions of other painters' work, we were talking about the politics of what we were trying to do rather than the material that we were using. And so I think this award has kind of given me permission to have many more conversations about painting than I would previously have had. And that seems, that's a great liberation for me. I feel much more confident about talking about what I do in terms of how I do it and what the stuff I'm doing it with is doing. So there's something about the award that does that. It's a little bit hard to explain, but I suppose it's giving me even more permission to be a painter.
And the award is connected to an exhibition, always with a partner institution. So that's going to be the UCCA in Beijing. And you are having your first exhibition in China next year. What are your expectations? Is there a special preparation? What do you think how your work is going to be seen in China?
Well, it is incredibly exciting. I mean, everybody that I say, you know, this too, that I'm going to have an exhibition in Beijing is like, like me, like really excited by the idea. And I think what we decided to do, because I think obviously not many people, even in Beijing, know my work at all. So what we decided to do is give a survey show, a presentation of all sorts of things that I do. So there'll be works on canvas, there'll be one of the most famous installations, something called A Fashionable Marriage, part of another big installation that I've made called Naming the Money, which are paintings on wood, wooden figures painted. We'll be presenting some of the work that's painted on ceramics, the jelly mold pavilions for Liverpool, say lots of canvas works, a sound work made in collaboration with Magda Stavarska, a work called The Blue Grid Test. So I think that we all thought the most important thing was to offer a range, a whole range of the work that I've made, from very early work, 1984, something like that, to something that was made in 2020. And to encourage a sort of walk through, a perambulation through these different ideas about political histories, ideas about personal challenges, and a way of engaging with the work that shows that I really am trying to engage and speak with audiences. And so there will be sound as well as the objects and paintings on canvas. And I think, and it's a marvellous space. You know, it's quite a challenging space to show in, but I like that. You know, I like to be able to work with a space and see how to get the best experience for an audience, really. Yeah, so it's like super exciting. And we're just hoping, all of us, because I'm taking lots of my studio team with me, that we've got enough time to install the work with the technical staff there and get to experience some of Beijing.
Is there a chance to see your work somewhere closer to Vienna in upcoming month or within Europe? What's the next?
Yes, there are quite a few things. On the 1st of November, I have a solo show at Hollybush Gardens in Clerkenwell in London. In New York at the moment, at the Flag Foundation, is an exhibition called Make, Do and Mend. Upcoming in March, there's an exhibition called Nets for Night and Day, which is a duo exhibition with Magda Stavarska at Mudam in Luxembourg. And then in June, an exhibition of new work at Kettle's Yard in Cambridge. And then in Paris in the autumn of 2025. So lots of chances for the Viennese to get about.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.